Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting from Atlanta, Georgia, this is The Bright Side with Technisha.
A daily broadcast on real life issues that will keep you motivated.
And now, here's your host, Technisha.
Good afternoon, everyone. Today is April the 19th, 2014, and you're tuning into another episode of The Bright Side with Technisha. And I'm so glad we are here today on this blissful Saturday. Coming up is one of our special guests. This woman has done so much. She has so many hats. I just don't want to give it all until she actually comes on, but she is one of a kind. I hope to get to that point, too, in my life where I can get to her standards. But we're just waiting on her at the moment, Ms. January Jones, not the one who played on Mad Men, but this is the actual another January Jones. But while we are waiting on her to call in, I'm going to hit you with tunes at the moment. And when she comes in, then we'll just get started.
Baby,
It takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. And at the end of the day, the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. So United Way is asking you to make a pledge. Tutor a child who needs help. Mentor a kid who needs someone on their side. Volunteer to read to children. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Be a reader, tutor, or mentor. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge now at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
What would I do without your smart mouth? Drawing me in and you kicking me out. You've got my head spinning, no kidding. I can't pin you down. What's going on in that beautiful mind? I'm on your magical mystery ride. And I'm so dizzy, don't know what hit me. But I'll be alright. My head's underwater, but I'm breathing fine. You're crazy and I'm out of my mind. 'Cause all of me loves all of you. Love your curves and all your edges, all your perfect imperfections. Give your all to me, I give my all to you. You're my end and my beginning, even when I lose, I'm winning. 'Cause I give you all of me, and you give me all of you. Oh, how many times do I have to tell you? Even when you're crying, you're beautiful too. The world is beating you down. I'm around through every mood. You're my downfall, you're my muse, my worst distraction, my rhythm and blues. I can't stop singing, it's ringing in my head for you. My head's underwater, but I'm breathing fine. You're crazy and I'm out of my mind. 'Cause all of me loves all of you. Love your curves and all your edges, all your perfect imperfections. Give your all to me, I'll give my all to you. You're my end and my beginning, even when I lose, I'm winning. 'Cause I give you all of me, and you give me all of you. Oh, give me all of you. Cards on the table, we're both showing heart. Risking it all, but it's hard. 'Cause all of me loves all of you. Love your curves and all your edges, all your perfect imperfections. Give your all to me, give my all to you. You're my end and my beginning, even when I lose, I'm winning. 'Cause I give you all of me, and you give me all of you. I give you all of me, and you give me all of you. Oh.
mix. It's just me and you. Girl, it's just me and you. We make a movie, no edits. Everything about your body, my fetish. You hear me calling you. I know you hear my body calling you. 911 emergency. Tell them my heart needs surgery.
All right, cutting that short, because on the line we have Miss January Jones, and she is the author of Thou Shall Not Whine, What We Whine About, Why We Do It, and How to Stop It. It just gets so ridiculous, the little whining. But January Jones, how are you today?
I'm fine, Tazika. I'm happy to be on the show with you, and of course, you know, I love talking about how to help people stop whining. As you know, there's a whining epidemic going on in the world, and it's kind of a issue that I've addressed in my book. And my book went to number one at Amazon.com, so it's an issue that I think a lot of people want to talk about.
What really got you started to write this book on whining?
Well, because of this enormous epidemic taking place, and I felt that someone had to address it. My publisher, they asked me to do a survey on the top 10 things that people whine about, and it took 2 years to do this survey. At first we thought, oh, it's just going to be 10 things. Well, guess what? Once we did the survey, we realized that it was 10 things for every age and every stage of life, from cradle to convalescent home. People have their own issues, and they whine about a lot of things, a lot of different things, you know. Children whine about different things than seniors. So the book evolved into 13 chapters. So basically, we address children, teenagers, parents, couples, singles, baby boomers, seniors, women, men, best friend, and grandparents.
Oh, yes. That would definitely be perfect, because I promise that's all my twin girls do is whine, whine, whine. And then when I go to my job, I listen to customers whine. I'm like, wait a minute. I have children that do this. I'm not about to listen to a grown person whine, too.
Yeah.
Well, it's
something we all deal with, unfortunately.
I wanted to say, I love your name, and when I was going online and pulling up your name, it came up, because I didn't know that it was another lady named January Jones for Madman, and I think it was another singer and dancer on a TV episode, on another show as well. January Jones I'm looking for.
Well, you know, it was funny, because the young Jan, certainly not the young, beautiful, young January Jones, nor am I the older one, but it's funny because a lot of men, young men go on the internet looking for the young January, and older men go on looking for the exotic dancer who used to be on the Johnny Carson show. And then what they find is me. I'm the author, I'm a grandmother, and I hope I don't disappoint them too much.
I hope not, but you got so much up on your belt. You are a powerful woman. You do the radio show. You write books. This book is it the fourth book for you?
Well, this is actually, I've written five books, and right now I'm working on my sixth book. My first book was Oh No, Jackie O, and that I wrote, oh gosh, when I was 50 years old, so that was a long time ago. And that went, that was on the front page of the National Enquirer. That was about Jackie Kennedy. And then I wrote Jackie, Ari, and Jack, The Tragic Love Triangle, which was more Kennedy. Then I switched to humor, where Thou Shalt Not Whine, The 11th Commandment, is a humor. It's a book with humor and hope. Then my fourth book is called Priceless Personalities, and it's success stories shared by January Jones. And these are interviews from my radio show that we have transcribed and put into book form. And that now is at Amazon, and it's going to be published at audible.com within the next month. And then the last book I wrote was the Christina, the Onassis Odyssey, Celebrities, Courtships, and Chaos. So I'm very eclectic. I have a wide range of things that I write about.
I tell you, God has been good for you, January, because that is amazing to keep going like this. But what I want to know, what made you interested in the Kennedys? How did you learn so much about them?
Okay, well, you know, I was, like everyone from my generation, we're all still 50 years later asking who killed Kennedy. I did a lot of research on it and followed it, and I wrote my first book, and my theory is quite controversial. However, it's had quite a bit of traction. A lot of people still like to talk about it. Once I published that book, I then did over 500 interviews on the Kennedys. So I'm kind of a quasi-Kennedy expert. Actually, I've been doing quite a few interviews this year because, you know, it's the 50th anniversary of the assassination, and people are still asking who killed Kennedy. So it's a very current topic, even though it took place 50 years ago.
I know, right? And that's what I love about history, because it's nothing that it's not so simple just to let it go or just put it down. You still wonder, why did this happen? Who did this? I love history. It don't just happen in February. It just continuously go on. That's why sometimes I get upset when we celebrate, like, Black History just for February. I'm like, just for one, history is every day. You learn something new all the time.
Absolutely.
So what was Jackie O like?
Well, you know, I didn't meet her personally, but I feel like I've known her all these years and all this research I've done. She actually was in a difficult spot. She was married to the president. Everyone thought, well, because she was a Kennedy, she was a very wealthy woman. Well, the reality is she wasn't a wealthy woman. The Kennedy money all stayed in Kennedy Trust Fund, so she did not have money of her own, actually, until she married Aristotle Onassis, and that was a $5 million wedding day. He gave her $3 million and each of her children $1 million, and this was cash. This wasn't trust fund money. So that's the first time she had money. But, you know, she was living in the White House, and it seemed to all appearances everything was wonderful in Camelot, but the reality was the president was very unfaithful. Her life was very humiliating because everyone in the White House knew what the president was doing, and he carried on in the White House. So for her, the White House was not a happy place. It was a very difficult place for her. And she took her children and spent as much time as she could away from the White House because it was too embarrassing for her to be there.
Oh, wow. So she married this guy after Kennedy.
She what?
So January, she married Aristotle after Kennedy?
Oh, yeah. She and Aristotle, they were connected before the assassination. He invited her on his ship, and they had a romantic interlude. Then she came back to this country, and Kennedy was assassinated. And Aristotle Onassis was the first one who got there. He went to the White House, and he was with her during the funeral, and they were married within 4 years after the assassination. And at that point, Aristotle Onassis was probably one of the wealthiest, most powerful men in the world. So consequently, her life changed dramatically.
Wow. Do you think anybody ever thought that he had some part in it, with the assassination of Kennedy?
You know, I think no one except me came up with that theory. And I came up with that theory because it seemed to me that he was very attentive to her. He had the motive, the money, and the means, and he fell in love with her, and he wanted to have her as his wife, and he knew with her as his wife that he would have the doors to all the wealthiest, most important people in the world would open to him. So my theory is that he was the money behind this assassination, and that he was able to order this assassination through intermediaries. No one knew he did it, and he was able to keep himself removed from it. Mm-hmm. In my book, I named the actual shooters, and they were in Dallas, and they were stopped, and they escaped. They left through Canada. Interesting enough, the actual shooters, A&E did a five-part series on the men who killed Kennedy, and surprisingly, they named the same people that I named in my book. So that was kind of nice to know other people kind of had the same thought as I did. But it's a theory, you know, it's a theory. There's 100 yeah. theories out there. There's a new theory all the time. We'll never know the truth.
We won't, and that's what makes it so exciting. But I guess, it's, like you said, it's always going to be an ongoing discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Just
like
we're going to always keep talking about that, who's his assassinator. So it does make you wonder, like, oh, boy, I love history, and I'm glad that you were able to get that opportunity to do that. That would be awesome for me to do something like that.
Oh, yeah. I was a history major in school, and I love doing research, and everything in my book is documented. I have an extensive bibliography. I worked a long time on the Kennedy books. But, you know, life goes on, and then I moved into humor with Thou Shalt Not Wine. And now I'm enjoying Priceless Personalities, sharing success stories, and I have 10 people in that book who are fascinating people. They have overcome a lot of difficulties. They're survivors, and they've all shared their stories on my radio show, just as I'm doing with you right now. And I'm enjoying that very much.
Well, thank you. I know I was excited when I seen how many people actually listen to your show. I'm like, that's what I want to be. And that's what I was saying earlier before you came on. I said, I would love to have the standards just like that, but I want it to be in a positive way. I don't want to do the garbage talking of people to get the popularity because, I mean, to be honest, I look at a lot of talk shows, and that's basically how some of them get their start, you're garbage talking. I don't want to be negative. But, January, how long did it take you to write the book, Thou Shalt Not Wine?
Oh, that took 2 years. That was 2 years of work on that book, you know, because we did a survey, and we surveyed all kinds of people, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, people in convalescent homes. For teenagers, one of my friends taught high school English, and she gave the survey out as a homework assignment for the high school classes, which was wonderful research. All of these people gave us what they whined about, why they whined about it, and then they gave us the cures for whining. So we actually have over 100 cures in that book with a lot of humor and hope. A lot of people ask me, who whines more, women or men? And who do you think that would be?
Oh, man. I probably would go with women because we carry so much on us. And we just need the affection. But sometimes it can go the other way, too. Because, I mean, I'm married. And I probably will have to say because I do probably get on my husband's nerves. And I can see the look in his face like, no, we are not going to go there.
Well, the truth is women do whine more than men. They are born with the DNA whining gene. And the reality is women speak over 7,000 words a day, whereas men speak only 2,000 words. So just by virtue of the quantity of words spoken, women have more things, more opportunities to whine about. And what do women whine about? Well, they whine about things that are personal. They whine about their weight, their hair, their husbands, their mothers-in-laws, kids, lack of money. whining and shoes are to women what Home Depot and sports are to men. Women love to whine.
Yes, I have one of those. I do. I have one of those moments. You just shout it out, because I definitely whine about my kids. They just keep on level 10. I be 39 hot when I have to deal with them sometimes, because it's every moment, every day. Well, right now, you cannot hear them, but right now, they're fussing right now. They can't help it.
Yeah. What's the cure for whining women? Well, my favorite cure is chocolate. If someone's whining, I give them some Godiva chocolate, and guess what? They start smiling, and they're all over the whining. Now, people ask me, what do men whine about?
Yeah.
Well, men whine about things that they can't really do much about. They whine about government, politics, economy, sports teams, lack of money. They adore whining about their sports teams or their golf games. And, you know, as Roseanne Barr said, if it has testicles or tires, it's going to cause you trouble.
Or sometimes. Now, from my experience, I get most of the guys, they like to complain about their relationship. And, that'd be a totally different entity. I'd be like, okay. Yeah.
And, you know, they whine about lack of money. And lack of money is the biggest whine across the board. Finances, that's the big thing. Everyone, no matter what age or stage in life, they whine about that. Definitely.
So what would be their favorite cure?
Well, for men, my favorite cure is to pretty much ignore them. But if that doesn't work, then the cure for men is that what we do is we, if they're whining, if it's my husband, I usually try to change the subject, and I'll ask about his sports team. He went to Ohio State, and so I'll say, well, how are those Buckeyes doing? And all of a sudden, all he wants to do is talk about sports, and that kind of gets him over the whining. Another favorite cure I have for whining is that when people are whining, if you smile at them and just keep smiling, eventually you'll break them down and they'll smile back and they'll stop whining. Whining is basically a way of getting attention. You know, people want attention. They want people to listen to them.
Yeah.
So sometimes just listening will do the trick. It just depends on who you're dealing with and what kind of mood they're in. You know, my book has over 100 cures for whining. So we have all kinds of things people can try.
And, of course, when it comes to your children, they start to whine. You start hollering them, go sit down. Stop whining. Get on my last nerve.
Well, you know, it says how to stop kids from whining. You know, so sometimes if you're at home in private, you could just smack them. But in public, you can't do that. So in public, you give them the mother's look, and everyone knows what that is. When you get look from a mother, that usually can stop them in their tracks.
I give them the little pinch, my ass, and they'll look at me like, ouch, mommy, that hurts. Now are you going to... Because no one can save you.
Well, kids and whining go together like peanut butter and jelly, and kids can whine anytime, anywhere, as long as it will embarrass their parents and they know what to do about it.
they try to do it, too, at the point where they think they're going to get something, and it doesn't work like that. Especially for me, it's not going to work like that. If I tell you no, then that's what it is. You can whine and howl all you want. You're still not going to get your way. No. And I refuse for you to act up in the store, because I always tell mine, I don't know why they want to start acting up in the store, because I think they, in their mind, someone's going to save them. And I tell them, well, you better look up above, to the sky, because that's the only one who's going to save you. None of these other people
around. You can't be held hostage by these kids.
That's what they try to do. I'm going to act up. You're going to give me what I want.
That's for sure. And let's see. We're talking about baby boomers, you know. Oh, it says, well, what do parents whine about? Well, parents whine about their kids, and their kids. You know, parents and whining go together like teenagers and texting. Parents, you know, they aren't even as smart as guppies because they actually breed on purpose. And
yeah,
the cure for whining parents is to hang in there as long as you can, and then you got to hope that as they get older, you can send them away to college or to the military, or then you can send them far, far away until they have their own children. And grandchildren, you know, they're your reward for not killing your children.
I just throw in my I just throw in my I'll never make any promises. You always throw I'm gonna kill you. Like, really? Yeah, you been saying that for so long? I'm still here. But most of the time, most of the baby boomers on my job, they mostly complain because, see, I'm a waitress, so you mostly will hear them complain about the young people, how they think they know everything. And I'll be listening. I laugh because I know I'm part of the Generation Y, so I laugh. They arrogant.
Uh-huh.
They don't like listen. And I'm like, really? That's what I mean, because we had a meeting, and we had to do a list of things that were different for each time, and I mean, the baby boomers just they tore my generation up January. They did. Oh, yeah, Eric, you need to listen. You think you know everything. I was like, wow. I said, I don't feel that way. Like, I don't think I know everything. So I was like that. But it still hurted a little because the thing that that's what people think about generation. Like, we're just, we don't understand. But I think some most of us do.
Well, you know, we talk about baby boomers, and, you know, they whine a lot, and they are to whining what computers are to crashing. And baby boomers, they all want to be winners, but some of them end up whiners because they are the instant gratification generation. Even if they don't know what it is, they want it, and they want it right away. So they have a lot of opportunities to whine. And, you know, it's such a bad example for their children, really.
It is. But the way I sometimes calm them down, I would throw a joke out. I will throw a quick joke to make them laugh.
Yeah.
That's like my humor comes out just naturally, and I don't try to make you laugh. It just comes out that way, and they always tell me on my job, you should become a comedian. I would have to comedian, because I just can't think of a joke like that off the top of my head, because I think about my life situation, and that's how I probably be able to tell my joke. But what we're going to do,
There's only one station that will keep you happy. Blog Talk Radio. We're taking more of your calls at 347-426-3751. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this commercial break.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then, hey, the dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And the reason why they whine. And I just think, like you said, January, it's just a gene in us somewhere that we just got to whine. We can't help it. We just can't. We just, to some part of us, we just need somebody to just listen. Because I have coworkers on my job. They do that. They just want you to listen. And at that point of time, I like I always say, most of all my guests about my coworkers, it's always a psychiatrist. I'm just not that guy. But I don't mind listening because I guess I'm a whiner, too. We all do it. We guilty. We are.
Well, I think so. And you know what? I like what you said earlier about humor, because that's what my book's all about. It's finding the humor in life and finding the humor in each whining situation. And, you know, humor can diffuse anything. Humor can help people get through one day at a time. It's what I believe in. It's kind of almost my religion, because I love humor. I love natural humor. I don't so much, like you, I don't tell jokes per se, although I enjoy jokes for sure. But I think you can find humor in everything in life. Don't you agree?
I do, because there's so much around us. And even when it seems like it's bad, you can take that bad and make it good. Well, all the issues that we have in this time of days, the economic issues, you know, somewhere there's a little humor in everything, regardless of how we want to look at it. Being miserable will really cause so much stress on you, and it's so unhealthy.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that we come across, well, we talked about baby boomers, but, you know, couples who are married or, you know, even if they're just living together, they tend to whine about a lot of things. One of the, of course, everyone, as you know, whines about money. That's a problem for everyone. I don't care who you are, where you are. You either don't have enough, and I haven't met too many people who have too much, but in general, it's a big topic. Couples tend to whine about sharing chores. You know, a lot of times the women feel that they're doing everything at home and the man just walks in and does nothing. And especially now, because we're finding that most families have two income situations, so the men and women are going to work and they're both coming home tired. And so they need to share their chores and share their responsibilities. You know, marriage may thrive on commitment, but like insanity, it can lead you to being committed. You start out marrying your best friend, and then you wake up one morning sleeping next to your nearest relative who happens to be snoring very loudly. I speak from experience. I've been now married 44 years to my very, very best friend, and guess what? He snores.
Oh, that nerves to hear that snoring. Oh, Lord, I know that feeling, Jerry, where I can feel what you're going through. Yes. Oh,
yeah, and now it's so bad. Now he's even telling everyone that I snore, too, and I can't do.
What my husband told me, January, you hit it on the nail. My husband said the same thing. He said, you snored, and I'm still trying to figure out, is that true? I said, I don't recall myself ever snoring. I'm going to have to record that.
I know.
When I think to myself, I said, let me try to go to sleep, and then I won't have to hear it, because I know sometimes I'm a hard sleeper. But I just look at him like, and I just, and he always tell me, he said, just touch me if I start snoring, and I do, and it doesn't work. And I'm like, you still snoring.
Yeah. Well, you know, and then we talk about in the book what seniors whine about, and, you know, it's difficult growing old, and seniors whine about everything and then some. Seniors and whining go together like prunes and constipation. Seniors adore whining about their health or their lack of health, and seniors can get really negative, so they have to work very hard to overcome whining, because it's hard when you get older, if your health is not good. And a lot of seniors are just plain lonely, you know, and that's a big problem.
But see, they get to that point where they think, I can't do the same activities that I have done years ago. But I have seen people in their 70s still be hanging on and be getting down with their bad selves. And what I tell people is all about how you really take care of yourself. If you take care of yourself in the beginning off right, then when you get older, you don't have too much to worry about. Because there are some, like I just said, it's healthy 80-year-olds out here. And
well, you know, you are right now speaking to a very healthy, active 70-year-old. I turned 70 this year, and it's probably been the best year of my life. My radio show, my books. I think it's just a question. It's not, age is a state of mind. It has nothing to do with chronological. If you mm-hmm. feel young and act young, guess what? You're going to be young, and you're going to be successful at it.
You know, I love P90X. It's a workout program with Tony Horton, and in the video, because it's an old video, but he would say, I'm 45. He said, I see no age. And that is true. I see no age. That's all part of it. Like you said, it's all part of your mind.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
I'm 31.
Absolutely. I don't have much patience with whining anyway, at any age, and I especially don't have much patience for older people who whine because, you know, there's so many things older people can do. You can volunteer. You can help younger people. A lot of young families need help watching kids and doing things. And there's just no excuse to sit back and become a whiner. Because guess what? When you're doing that, you're not going to have very many friends for very long.
You're going to run every last one of them away if you think somebody wants to sit around and keep listening to that. You complain every 5 minutes, every day. Oh, January, you hit it right on the dot. Because I promise you. I hung around certain coworkers on the job, and they complain every 5 minutes. Like, get over it, man. Find something else to do. Matter of fact, bring a book to work and just do that. You'll be just fine.
Yes. Well, I hope everyone buys my book and takes it to work. It's available at Amazon.com. All my books are there at Amazon.com. Or go to my website at www.januaryjones.com, and you can find out about my radio shows. If your fans sign up with their name and email, they can download the first two chapters of my book for free. So I hope people will support this movement and stop whining.
Oh, but January, this is what I wanted to ask. What is the difference between whining and arguing a point? They're almost.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I agree. You need to get things straightened out. If there's a problem, you need to resolve it. And sometimes talking things out is a wonderful way to get resolution, and it's very helpful. Like a lot of times, people really have a good reason for whining. A lot of times you'll have people who have suffered a tragedy, a loss of someone they love, or a divorce, which is a loss. A lot of times people need to talk it out, get it out of their system. I write about in my book, I call it the pity party. And when I was a young woman, I was 25, and my first husband was killed in an airplane accident, and I was a widow with two small children. And my best friend, she was there for me through the whole thing, and she just let me talk and talk and talk until I started to heal. And, you know, it wasn't like I was whining. I just had to get things out of my system before I could turn things around. Then many, many years later, she went through a divorce, and our roles were reversed. And she was the one who needed to talk, and I was the one who listened and listened. And then later she came down with cancer. And I took care of her for 3 years, and we called that the ultimate pity party because we spent our time together laughing and remembering the good times, and that was a gift to be able to be there for her. So sometimes, you know, it's important to have that relationship with other people that you can talk things out. What I don't like is when people just whine and whine and whine, and they don't try to do anything to change things or make things better. You know, that's what takes you down. Yeah.
Yeah. To be thinking it's all about them, like, get over yourself. God, who got worse problems than you, and you complain about what? Nothing. Nothing at all.
Yeah.
It's just childish. Really is.
Yeah. Some people just like the sound of their voice, so that's when sometimes whining gets to be a big problem.
Mm-hmm. I can't stand the sound of some people's voice. Catch that little old chipmunk.
I know.
I love my daughter, but the difference between them, one is like me. Her voice is heavy, and the other one, she has a soft-spoken voice. So when she speaks and whines, I'm like, okay, please, because it sounds like a little old chipmunk. And I'm like, have to sit here and listen to that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in my book, I have a chapter on Thou Shalt Not Wine, and it's kind of interesting, and it gives examples of what whiners would say and versus what winners would say. Now, when you're talking about a weather, a whiner would say the weather is too hot, too cold, too humid, too dry, too wet. A winner would say the weather is sunny, fair, pleasant, fabulous, invigorating. So it's just how you look at life. You know, whiners want to be negative, and winners, they want to be positive.
Oh, I like that. Winners and whiners, take the H out. I love it. I like how you got it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Who would you say, who would you consider as the whiniest celebrity?
Oh, well, there's, I don't know if you've read my book yet, but there's a whole chapter on woe is me, I'm a celebrity. You know, celebrities must be the luckiest people in the world, but you wouldn't know it by listening to the way some of them whine. Television is filled with telebabies who have turned whining into an art form. There's another type of celebrity whining. That's the kind about why it's so hard to be a celebrity. These are the people we love to hate. These are the ones you want to say, give me a break. They are acting like big rats, spoiled rotten ones, and we see and hear about them every day. Despite their good fortune, they just can't stop from being big belly-aching babies. For some, their fondest dreams have become their biggest nightmares, and to me, their complaints are ridiculous. And I think we see that all the time. And unfortunately, these negative whining celebrities, unfortunately, they get so much publicity. Don't you agree?
Yes, I sure do. I agree with that 100%, January. I do.
And it's sad because the ones who are not whining and doing their job and helping others, you know, they don't get as much publicity because, you know, the press is always looking for something negative, controversial. This is the kind of stuff we see on TV and in the Internet, especially on the Internet with all the social networking. I'm kind of a little over all of that. I think it gets to be too much.
Well, that's why I guess that's what we have to deal with. We have to deal with these whiners. They have nothing else to do. They are like the world coming to an end if you don't listen to them.
Yeah, yeah, I know. And it happens all the time. It's sad. And they're bad examples, you know, for their children and grandchildren. I have 7 grandchildren, and people ask me, what do grandparents whine about? Well, you know, I said earlier, grandkids are your reward for not killing your children. And sometimes when I look at my grandkids and my children, I wish I had just skipped the children. And I wish I had just had grandchildren. You know, it would have been a lot easier.
But you know what really gets me, January,
yeah.
I know we're going to come to it, is that the fact that some people don't realize that they get on other people's nerves. See, like me, I don't, I have gone on and on maybe about a situation, but then at some point you got to realize that that's bothering other people. You're bringing them down with that. And you know what that reminds me of? What's that cartoon, Winnie the Pooh, with Eeyore always going around with his gloomy self, clowning up everybody else. Oh, I guess I got to go. And you'd be like, Eeyore, go on with that. He used to get on my nerves in the classroom. But you always had Miss that little bow on your arm tail.
Well, you know, grandparents, a lot of grandparents whine about the way their grandkids are being raised, because they're being raised much differently than we raised their parents. And everyone knows that grandchildren can't do anything wrong and their parents can't do anything right. So my cure for grandparents is just ignore the parents and then get really good at keeping secrets with your grandkids.
Well, I just say to really get by this, just try to be passive to the people who are really complaining. just listen to them, because usually that's the number one case. Not listening, that will irritate a person really quickly. So that's why I am. I do. I'm a very good listener, so I just listen. Because 9 times out of 10, you go on here and listen. They'll hurry up, tell you their issue, and they're done. Just listen to them.
Yeah.
That's all they want. So, January, any advice for someone who wants to sell their book on Amazon?
Oh, well, you know, basically, I've had a wonderful experience with Amazon. They have a program, and it's called Create Space, and you can go on and self-publish your book. It's books on demand, so you don't have to have the expense of having books in your published and printed, so they just order them through Amazon, and Amazon prints them and sends them. I've had a wonderful experience with Amazon. Now, I've been self-published, and I've also had a New York publisher for Thou Shalt Not Wine. So I've done it both ways, and it's quite easy now to get your book published and to write a book now. There's so many websites that are helping you. There's really, I feel there's really no excuse. If you feel you have a book in you and you want to write it, it's very doable. 20 years ago, it was very difficult, very difficult. And now things have changed, technology, the internet, there's no excuse. You need, if you have a book, I advise everyone to sit down and write it and do it.
Okay. Well, those are some great tips. January, I appreciate you for being on the show and enlightening us with your humor. I love the title of the book. It's wonderful, and how to deal with these whiners, the difficult people. We just have to just open up to them, because it's going to be difficult people. My listeners who are listening, you know you're probably a difficult person, so these are some great tips for you to learn. Don't get on people's nerves. If you feel like you're getting to that point, like I said, you can always get a psychiatrist. Might be a little expensive, but it will help you. Or you can always go to God for your issues. That's why I tell God about your problems.
Well, you know, obviously, they say, what's my favorite cure for whining? And my cure is lots and lots of chocolate. Stop whining, start smiling. Share my show with everyone you know. Eat lots of chocolate. Switch from whining to wine, and then you'll be a winner.
Hey, I like that one. Go from wine to wine. Wine always makes together. I need to start because I don't even drink.
Well, less whining and more wine probably will put everyone in a much better mood, and I think that's what we need. We need, and plus, you know, as we talked about earlier, you have to have humor in your life.
You do. Well, thank you so much again, January Jones, and please Google January Jones and tune into her show, because it's a great show. This is a lovely, beautiful woman. Thank you so much, and God bless you, January.
Thank you. It was nice spending some time with you, and I hope all of your fans continue enjoying your show, and hopefully they'll listen to my show sometime soon. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. Well, coming up next, I have Diane T. Garden. She is the author of Budgeting on a Dime. This is focusing on your finance problems and controlling the money issues that we have in our relationships that cause most divorces, which is the number one thing to divorce. So we're going to hit a quick commercial break, and we'll be back on shortly.
I go to school with your children. We say the Pledge of Allegiance together. I'm one out of every 4 children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger. I'm lucky to grow up where I could be whatever I want. I want to grow up and be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry. Please visit feedingamerica.org today to find your local food bank. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for kids like me. Together, we're Feeding America. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back on. And on the line I have Diane T. Garden, as I mentioned, who is the author of Budgeting on a Dime. For all my couples out there, you know we have had this discussion with your mate. Where's the money going? Who's spending what? How much are you spending? So let's welcome Diane T. Garden. How are you today, Diane?
Well, good morning, Technisha. How are you? I'm doing good.
I'm doing wonderful. Well, morning, well, afternoon to you and a morning to me. So, Diane, you know, we all go through this money issue. I know I have gone through it, through the situation where I feel like I'm maybe the only one paying most of all the bills, and it gets, and you try not to argue about it, but it gets to that point like, oh, my God, I need backup. I need help. And knowing that you already know the circumstances, because, for instance, my husband, he is disabled. But I still get frustrated even though I know of the situation. It just really gets to the point where it just works your nerves. Like you never feel like you could save enough because you're always putting on bills. So what is your solution for us couples out there who are enduring this?
Well, one thing is, when you're at a space in your relationship where you're actually not fighting about it, is the best time to bring it up. Because, you know, once you're in the middle of a fight, you're in the middle of the heat, you say things, and neither of you are going to really listen to each other. It's just going to escalate. So pick a time when, you know, you're at a low ebb and say, hey, can we just talk about, you know, the money situation? And that's one thing is, you know, choose a time when you're not already fighting or already upset, already tired, or something has come up where you, you know, look at you know, your bank statement and say, you know, what the heck are you doing? You know, because that's obviously, you feel that, that's valid, but it's not the way to really approach a situation where you're going to, you know, resolve anything together. So make sure you're both not angry or tired when you come together to talk about money. Would you agree that maybe that's an important way to start?
Oh, yes, that is. Communication is the key. What are some other good tips on how to avoid arguing about money?
Well, one thing that people have is a mistrust of each other, because if you have your own checking accounts and you don't have a joint checking account, you don't really know what each other is doing. And so it's easy to imagine in your mind, oh, you know, they're out there spending all the money, you know, on stuff that's not necessary. And if you have a joint checking account, it kind of makes you accountable because you can get the bank reconciliation, which comes at the end of each month, and just look at it together and say, okay, let's figure out, you know, where the money is going, because especially cash withdrawals, it doesn't say where that money is going. So you have to start identifying how you're spending your money to know if you're spending it on things that are really necessary or things that are luxuries.
That is true. And sometimes we spend because people have a addiction. I was looking at a show, a woman said she has to buy something, even if it's toilet tissue. And it's like, that's really an issue. Like, because you would, to me, I feel like you would never have money. You just spend it on things. I got to spend it on shoes. So for me, I do not have to always buy shoes. I will wear a nice, good-looking pair of heels that will go with every suit possibly. It doesn't cost to go to the mall. Sometimes I come out the mall with one bag, and I see some people come out with six bags, and I used to feel bad about that, Diane. But then I said, you know what? Mall will take your money. It will. It will get you. And I love the people who be in the middle of the floor of the mall. Oh, stop over here. They'll catch your glance. Oh, come over here. No, I'm not coming over there. Matter of fact, I'm walking. I'm going to keep walking.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. In other words, if you as a couple plan on how to spend your money, you've kind of got an accountability buddy where, you know, they know that you're not supposed to spend, money on just, you know, wandering around on food out. That's a very high expense and usually can be avoided. But we treat ourselves, sometimes we treat ourselves or treat our depression or treat certain emotions by spending money. So you feel like, okay, well, you know, I'm not going to let that bother me. I'm going to make myself happy. And like you say, go to the mall and buy another shirt for a man or blouse for a woman, another pair of shoes, another whatever it is, when you really have enough of those, it's not that you need those, it's that you're trying to make yourself better. And my suggestion is talk with your partner and say, well, what's a creative way that we can feel better and make ourselves, you know, feel better about a situation or not as depressed or not as down without actually spending money? So sometimes the other person can just open your mind up to a whole nother, you know, way of thinking, and you can share with each other ideas that you have. I do think that it's important to be as creative as possible as you can be by not spending money. For example, we love movies. That's something that, you know, Wade and I just love to do is go to the movies. But they're very expensive. So we I mean, it can be crazy, especially if you have a couple of kids with you.
and I usually come out on DVD.
Right, and you know, so you might have to wait, you know, for it to come out on Amazon or Netflix or one of your, you know, movie channels, but if you can wait until, you know, the movie comes out there, it can be something like $14.99 for as many people as you want. You can fill a room with people and have them watch that same movie, whereas it costs something like $20 to $21 each. When you go to the movies, it just gets ridiculous. And then popcorn and candy and sodas and, oh, my gosh, it just turns into this major undertaking. And what if the movie is really bad? I mean, you know.
Exactly.
You can,
and then you don't waste all your time and your money just for going in the movies. Terrible. And then most of the time, because I usually go to AMC Theater if I do go, and you have to get there before 12 to actually get a good discount. They won't charge you as much. And then they charge the children like they charge an adult. And it's ridiculous.
Right. Yeah, there used to be, you know, discounts for certain things, but it's like, again, it's a creativity process. Say, hey, we're going to go to the movies. We're going to, wait until this movie comes out on a DVD and buy it, and then it's even less expensive than getting it on one of the, services, because you can watch it over and over and over again if you like it, right?
You sure can, all for free. And every now and then, you might catch a little cheaper on demand on your TV.
Right. Exactly.
Hey, but, you know, they said most of all the issues that spark a fight, that ranks the number one for most of our couples out here. Because I think people feel like your debt will ruin us, and you must find a way to pay it off, instead of just saying it's our debt together. Because that's how I have to take consideration with my husband's bills. It's ours together. Let's try to help pay this off together.
That's right.
Yeah, you're one. When you marry, you are one now. You're not just by yourself, so you have to take that. And sometimes I do get the attitude like, okay, this is your bill. I didn't cause this. I didn't make this. And then I have to change my attitude. Okay, how are we going to go about paying this?
Right, because, you know, when you're married, particularly in the states that are community property, which more and more of them are getting, California is one of the community property states. You happen to live there, and you can look it up online, you know, which states are community property. What that means is when you get married, you are saying all of our debts, both debts, are all of our debts, and both of our incomes are all of our income, and all the stuff that we own or we owe is all of ours. So it's no longer a matter of this is something that you bought, so you need to pay for it. Well, not really, not by law. So you have to work together as a couple. I think that it's good to make a budget, which is to take a look, and this does take some work, because you've got to collect bills and know what your outgoing expenses are. Most bills stay current. In other words, they stay the same. So your car payment is always going to be the same every month, and your, you know, house payment or rent or whatever is the same every month. Insurances, which you have to have the same every month. But there are some things that fluctuate a little bit during the year. For example, utilities. So in the summertime when it's hot, you know, your electricity goes up because you're running your AC, and your gas goes down. And in the wintertime, if you heat with gas instead of electricity, you know, in the wintertime gas goes up and electricity goes down a little bit. So that fluctuates a little bit. But generally, if you collect, say, 6 months worth of, just, you know, throw them together in a box and then organize them so that they're all, you know, all your utilities are together, all your, you know, your rent, your car payments and that, and figure out what is it that we actually need to survive. And then once you know that base amount, anything that you're spending that's not on those things are things that you need to consider really reducing or eliminating entirely. And you can do it. You really can do it. But it takes some creativity. It takes a little bit of work. And it takes, like you say, not blaming each other, but including each other to say, well, hey, you know, how can we, you know, cut down on our expenses? So some of the things really quickly for your listeners that will help, one thing is going out to eat. Now, I know sometimes, you know, you get tired, you work all day, you've got all, you know, you got to pick up the kids, you got to drop them off, you got to do all these activities, you get home and you're just too tired, so you order a pizza or you order something else out or stop by a fast food joint on the way home. The thing is that is much more expensive than making it yourself. So maybe you can think of something creative like, okay, let's say you have you know, part of a weekend where you're not having to do things, you know, and you're not already scheduled. Take the time to make like a big old pot of, you know, spaghetti or chili beans or, you know, fill in the blank, whatever it is you like, and then break it up into smaller containers and freeze them. And then if you don't feel like cooking that night, you know, you can get out your handy dandy microwave and, you know, defrost that sucker in a hurry. And, you know, then you can have something without having this enormous output of energy that you just may not have. And, you know, make it the meals that you make the best. So, you know, oh, well, this is going to be tasty, you know, whether it's, I don't care if it's pork and beans, if it's a stew, if it's whatever it is that you make, well, make a big old pot of it, you know, separate it into, say, four or five different meals, and then when you feel like having something and but not cooking, you have your choice, and it's going to be much less expensive, and that can save up to $200 and $300 a month in, you know, just stopping off at this little place and getting your fast food burrito or your fast food hamburger or whatever it is. And it's healthier for you, too.
And now they have certain things out there where you can probably pull up an app and it will show you things that you have in your refrigerator that you don't think you could combine together. You can. And that would definitely save. And fortunately for me, see, I work at a restaurant, so that helps. And most of the time, my husband, if I'm busy, he does all the cooking because we try not to eat out. We just ate out. It has been so many months since we ate out. We did it just because we were hungry right then and there, and bam, we were done with it. But I love to cook at home. And besides, it's so much food and all this processed food that we buy. So it's best to just come out buying your own food and cooking it at home.
Right.
Also wanted to mention, too, Diane, you know, a lot of people – think that when you're married, like we were mentioning about the debt, that it's not your problem. Now, granted, you're not really responsible for that part before you're married, but unfortunately, all bets are off should you get divorced. But even with the separate finances, your spouse credit score can affect your ability to get a joint credit. So that's something I wanted to put out for the listeners as well. So that's just something
absolutely
to think about. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to, you know, keeping your credit clean is really important because, now, it didn't used to be like that, but in today's world, let's say, you know, things happen and people lose their jobs or, you know, positions close down or companies close down and you're out looking for a job. Well, guess what? The employer now has the right to pull your credit record to check out your finances. And some people say, well, what does that have to do with my finances? Well, what it tells them is, do you pay your bills on time, which means are you a responsible person? Will you, you know, turn in your work on time? Can you be trusted with money of like, let's say you're in the accounting department or something having to do with the money of the business. Can you be trusted? Do you pay attention to, you know, paying bills on time? Second reason, if you're going to go rent an apartment, let's say you have to, you know, move, you know, from where you're living or rent a house, again, the landlord has the right to pull your credit record to see, hey, if they don't pay their bills, they're certainly not going to pay the rent, so I'm not going to rent to them. And the third thing is car companies. It is absolutely crucial that you have a good credit record, first of all, because, again, they know that they can depend on you to pay that car payment. But second of all, you can earn a lower credit or interest rate if you have good credit. So you end up paying less for your car.
Yeah, because that's what we're doing now. We're paying notes on a vehicle, but they went off on our credit and everything. But I think while we're paying it, that will go towards our credit report. So that's what I'm doing. I'm in the process of doing now. I'm trying to build up my credit report. I want my husband to do it as well. I know by him being set in his own ways, he don't really be thinking about it, but now that I'm thinking about his credit score, I'm like, that probably could bring us down, so we're going to try to work on his too, because that credit score is really something serious. Like, you feel like you're held in prison with that score, like, oh, I can't do this, I can't do that, because my credit
score.
That's
right. That's right, because...
Every time I go to the mall, Diane, they try to pull out their little, oh, I put a credit card with us. I say, no, my credit score already. Oh, no, it won't affect. Yes, it will. Because I have read research on that, too. When you apply for them, no, I don't want it. Always trying to push you to get a credit. I just told you my credit score messed up. You still trying to give me one? And then when they run it through, Diane, this is what they say. Oh, unfortunately, it didn't go through. I know that. I just told you. I just told you wrong way to tell. I know you got to do your job, but I just told you that it wasn't going to go through, and you still going right through. So
that's it. Well, you know, there's something, a little tip that it's going to be, you know, a money saver. Now, there are a lot of people out there. They have, you know, cute little commercials on it saying, oh, use, you know, creditreporting, you know, .com or whatever. Now, those are agencies that charge you to tell your credit score, but you can get it's called annualcreditreport.com, annualcreditreport.com, and once a year you can request all, because there are three major credit reporting agencies, so the numbers are different on each one of what your credit rating is, and you can get a free report once a year from all three basic credit reporting agencies, and that way you can check out your credit report, and if there might be something on there that you don't even know that's holding you back that was incorrect, and you can go to correct it. You can contact the agency and say, wait a minute, I never had this credit card. This is not mine. This is inaccurate. This is, not true. And when you clean up your credit like that, it helps your credit score, which, again, as you say, helps you, you know, maintain your job, get a better credit or interest rate when you do apply for loans, and also can get you, into a place if you need to rent or buying your house. So that's a tip, and that is free. Now, you only get one once a year, but, I mean, how often do you need to check your credit? You know, you only need two once a year.
Right, and I have mine with the Bank of America, too, Privacy Assist. So every time if someone does have to use my information for a credit report, it will just show up, okay, this is alert, this is the company that used your information, and the credit people took on that. Because I even had someone who took my name, because I had Identity RS, and someone took my name and used it for a bill, and I had to dispute that, and I had to have a frozen account. I had to go through the credit bureau just to put up, I think it was, they had to freeze the account through my credit report, so now I would be asked certain questions if I need a report or something like that of that sort, but that's the only way I was able to do it.
Right, and see, it's a good thing to have someone like that that's watching out for you and that will notify you, because you need to know, you know, it's like, wait a minute, I did not, for example, on my credit cards, you can have, a connection online where you go and you check out purchases. And let's say you just look at it once every couple weeks. You can identify right away that it's like, wait a minute, $8,000 for a guitar? I didn't buy a guitar. You go to your husband, did you buy a guitar? You know, go to your kids, did you buy a guitar? If you didn't buy that item, you call immediately the vendor who's charging you for it, and you say, this is an accurate. We did not buy this. We did not receive this. And if you catch it in time, like I check, my various cards and stuff once a week, because it doesn't take long. You just get on there and take a look at, you know, the charges. And if there's anything you can't identify, and then you go to ask your partner, hey, did you charge on this? They say no. You immediately call the vendor, not the credit card company. You call the vendor first to say, hey, don't ship this thing out because I did not do it. This is a fake out. And I've caught two people trying to buy expensive things on my credit card that it hadn't left the factory, it hadn't left the docks yet, luckily, and they thanked me. The vendor said, thank you, because you know what? You can go to your credit card company and have them reverse those charges, but once this thing leaves the dock and they receive it, we can't get the item back, so we're out that money. So they thanked me because I saved them from, they were going to get ripped off too. And, you know, I go to my credit card, then after you discuss it with the vendor to see if you can keep it from even being shipped out in the first place, and that gives you a good name with them as well. Then you go to your credit card company and you say, I want to, report an inaccurate charge on my credit card. We did not use this. You know, we've never been to Virginia or, fill in the blank wherever it's at. We did not request this. This is not something that we purchased. So this is, an inaccurate charge on the report, and they will have to reverse it out. And, then you don't get charged for stuff that you're not buying, that somebody else has somehow acquired your information. So it's important to check the status of your finances, whether it's your bank account or your credit cards, because that way you can catch and correct things before it becomes, a big problem for you.
Right, because, I had that issue happen to me, too, where someone used my card. I didn't even know I had lost it, but they already had purchased gas and a pair of shoes, processes, and also they reimbursed me my money. But that's a hard feeling when somebody just have your information and think they just can get away with anything.
I know. Doesn't it give you this really angry feeling? You're like, how dare they? Why don't they go out and get their own credit card and buy stuff instead of stealing other people's information?
And they're always plotting. They come up with new ways to just steal your information. And I always say to myself, if they could just apply that to getting a job, they will be actually successful.
It's true. It's so true.
But, Diane, what if one person is making more than the other person?
Well, I think it's important to keep in mind because everyone, rarely do you have two people that are making the same amount of money. So one might, have been in an industry their whole lives. The other one might have switched jobs quite a bit, which, leads you not to be able to make as much money in your profession. And I think that, you both have to come to an agreement that, hey, I'm doing the best I can and you're doing the best you can, and no one can do more than the best they can. And it shouldn't be held against you that, one person is ill or handicapped or, has become sick through no fault of their own and are unable to work when they plan to work for the rest of their lives, but they're now unable to work. Or let's say one of them is starting a brand new business and it's just not making enough money yet to really be considered adding a huge portion. But you have to get together and say, look, I'm doing my best and you're doing your best. We have to agree to be civil to each other about this and one not lord it over the other, because usually you're going to find an inequality in the amount people make. Rarely do you find a couple who's making exactly the same amount. So that has to be an understanding between the two people. Hey, we love each other and we both know we're trying our very best and, this is what it is. It doesn't mean that the person that makes more can spend more, because as you said before, all your income belongs to the family's resources, and all your debts are responsible by both people. So you can't really say, well, I'm more valuable than you are because I'm making more money. That's not fair. It's just not fair, and you have to, if you still want to have a good relationship and not be fighting all the time, you have to come down off your high horse and say, hey, we're both doing the best we can, and that's all we can do.
Exactly. That's it. Now, what if a person feels like they're no good at keeping track of money?
Well, just like anything else that you're no good at, if you practice, you will get better. I guarantee that. If you continue to say, let's say Your child wants to be on the basketball team, and she, we'll just make an example there, she goes for tryouts, and they say, no, you're not good enough. Well, what would you tell your child? Well, just give up. You're no good. You're a terrible person because you can't do this. No, you say, practice. And even the very best sports players like Michael Jordan, if you ever followed his career, he used to practice for hours every day, even after he was a superstar at basketball. Why? Because you can always do better. And by practicing, it keeps you, in the game, it keeps you strong, and it keeps you at the top of your game. So, you know, what you have to do is finances are no different. If you don't do your bank reconciliation, you should consider doing it. It right on the back of the form when they come, because every bank sends you at the end of the month a bank reconciliation, which basically says this is what you brought in and this is what you paid out and this is what your balance is. What's really important about that is, okay, what the bank has as your balance is not necessarily what your balance is. Because what if, like you say, in Aunt Mary, $100 because she's sick and you want to help her, and she puts it in her purse and forgets about it, okay? Just because it hasn't been gone through the bank yet doesn't mean you still have it in the account. So do not take your bank balance as your real balance. It's your checking account, and that's if you write everything in and deduct it as you go, or add, deposits as you go. Your bank your checkbook balance should be more accurate than your bank balance, because there might be checks outstanding or what's called deposits in transit, which means, somebody sent you a check, and so you write it in there that you have that money. So you go to spend it. Well, it's not in the account yet. So what tells you exactly what's going on with your money is the bank reconciliation, and on all reconciliations, it explains how to do it. So you just sit down and, you write out the checks that haven't cleared the bank yet, and then you write out the deposits that haven't arrived yet, and then you should be able to, reconcile your checkbook to your bank statement so that you actually know how much you have in the bank. And that way you can also call up Aunt Martha and say, hey, put that money in the bank, will you? Because, I want to make sure it's reflecting that, we no longer have that in our checking account. So bank reconciliations are important because they can tell you how much cash is going out. And cash, like I say, is one of those weird expenditures that nobody can explain because, a month later, you're not going to remember what you really spent the money on. But let's say you were saying in equal spending. Let's take an example. He's pulling out $60 per week in cash, and she's pulling out $20 a week in cash, and you're going to say, well, wait a minute, honey. That means we're spending $80 a week, and we don't know where it's even going, because you forget. You spend it, and it gets frittered away. That's why I think that, using a checking card, like a debit card, is better, because a debit is like spending cash, but so it's not like on a credit card, but it shows right away in your bank account. It comes out of there, but still it doesn't tell you what you're spending it on. So, one person could be spending it on, let's say, I'll take a high-ticket item like cigarettes. Cigarettes cost the world, and I know people, have their habits, and they feel like they shouldn't allow them to be taken away from them, but my goodness, if you want to save money, stop doing two things. Stop smoking and stop going out for coffee, because coffee, it's diabolical.
One guy told me it cost $12 a box in Philly for a box of cigarettes. I was like, whew, that should made you stop. That should made you stop as soon as you heard that.
Well, see, that's the thing. Until you actually sit down and think about and talk about what you spend money on, you don't realize it. For example, the owners of Starbucks made millions by selling coffee. You say, well, gosh, everybody's got a pot of coffee that they can make at home or that's at the office, and they put all these fancy fillers and stuff in it and all these fancy flavors. But the thing is take a little hand calculator and figure, because I don't drink that coffee. It's too strong for me. Let's just say $5 is what your cup of Java in the morning costs, your little shot of heaven, okay, with the little chocolate and the whipped cream and whatever else that they put, you know, you put in there, a muffin on the side or whatever. So it's like $5 a day times the 5 days that you're at work is $25 a week. That's $100 a month in coffee. And I guarantee you, if you went out and bought a professional coffee machine that could make your espressos and your lattes and, you know, you buy some of the flavorings, you could actually pay that thing off and be making it for pennies on the dollar at home and take it with you. So why stand in line at a fancy coffee place and pay $5 for something that you could be making at home for a dollar?
Because I think the word comes from being just lazy. We don't like to do stuff on our own. And luckily, to me, I'm glad that you do have this book out, because a lot of people have to be handed a roadmap that makes things very clear for them.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, I saw the need for it, and that's why for the year that I published it, that's why I chose it, because the economy is tanking. People are out of work. It's taking years to get a job, and, you know, they're becoming homeless, losing their homes, starving, you know, not having what they need or being able to pay for what they have. So it takes it and breaks it down, you know. It doesn't overwhelm you. The book is a step-by-step. Okay, first, look at this. Then, do this. Now, Chapter 3, I think, is one of the most critical chapters because it's reducing expenses, and I will go over every type of expense you can imagine, from utilities to insurances to holiday spending. I mean, wow, you know, you need to be able to cut and scrimp and save at every corner and step of the way so that you can get what I call living within your means. You figure out what is the net amount that you and your partner take home. That is what you have to get your spending down to. And people can say, well, you know, I can't stop buying insurance. Did I say stop buying insurance? You know, you need your car insurance. That's a law. You need to pay for certain insurances. But you can price check and price compare and get a lower rate. You can always get the same product for a lower rate. And, yes, we're talking about work, but guess what? In the end, what's it doing? Saving you money.
Because that spending money will hurt you. So, Diane, how often should you check your spending patterns? Should it be once a week or every time that you spend?
That would be way too much. I would say that, you know, again, the bank, coming back to the bank reconciliation, because that way it's a whole month of spending. If you have a joint checking account, then it's all the spending that's going on between you and your mate. And you can go down and say, okay, you know, here's, you know, all the stuff that we had to buy, and then here's some stuff that maybe we didn't have to buy. So maybe next time we'll look at each other and say, well, let's not go, again, to the movies, let's do something at home. Or let's not go out to eat. Let's, you know, make a good dinner together at home. Or let's not, you know, one thing, people guilt you. Okay, advertising is geared to make you feel guilty for not spending money. So you have to decide how much you're going to spend at different holidays and then say, you know, this is putting us in the poorhouse. And I'll give you a good example, because Christmas is already over, so people can't get upset with me for this. But Christmas comes around every year. So it's really important to say, set a limit for your Christmas spending right now. Right now in this month, say, we are not going to spend any more than that for this upcoming Christmas. And then decide to buy people things, you know, way before Christmas, because the closer you get to Christmas, that same item is going to go up and up and up, so that by December, when everyone's freaking out, it's going to be really expensive to buy that, when if you bought it in February, it would have been a lot cheaper.
Yeah, because I said I'm going to probably do mine right in June or either July. But one thing about me, Diane, that I think a lot of some parents have that I don't have, is they feel they have to be obligated to buy their children a whole bunch. I have eight-year-old twins, and I'm not about to spend an arm and leg just for you to go and break up all those toys. It's ridiculous. First of all, you don't have a job. You don't know anything about responsibilities. So why should I go and spend $400 or $500 just for you to be happy for most of the things that you're not going to play with anyhow.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, this is what I tell people. Okay, let's say you have a family, and I know this is oversimplifying it. No, this is not going to fit everyone's scenario, but they can apply it to their family. Let's say you have 12 people you have to buy for. Rather than waiting to the last minute and panicking because you can't think of anything, make a list, right, like in January, make a list of those things that these people want or, you know, or like. And, you know, people with hobbies, I love people with hobbies because you can always go fall back on that. It's, oh, they buy this little figurine or they like these little dolls or they like this little, you know, whatever it is. And buy one gift per month. So first of all, it's not going to wreck the end of your year because women especially are expected to bake things they don't usually bake, have parties that they usually don't have. So you're cleaning your house, you're baking, you're buying for everybody you know. It wrecks Christmas for you because you also are working and taking care of your kids and your house. And on top of all the regular duties, there's all these other things. So a gal and I were talking about it, and she said she has what's called the Christmas closet, okay? So no one's allowed to go in there and look, you know, for things or to go through the closet because that's where she's going to be stacking up the gifts during the year. So, you know, in January, buy one gift. And that way it gives you a whole month to look around for something, to look for the best deal on it, to do some comparison shopping, and get that, and then you've got one less thing to buy. And so by the end of the year, you're not panicking about Christmas because it's like, hey, all I have to do is wrap that stuff and I'm done, you know. It makes it fun again for women to have Christmas because it's not like all this massive amount of stuff coming at you at the same time. Plus, it's easier on the budget because instead of taking hundreds of dollars out of one month, which no one can afford, so they put it on the credit card. And my rule of thumb is by next November, if you're still paying off the credit card from the Christmas before, guess what? You spent too much.
Oh, yes. I mean, too much because I hear people, oh, I spent all my money. I don't have nothing left. And I say to myself, but why? For what? I mean, that is just ridiculous. I mean, I can't believe people, well, yes, I can, just take their money and just blow it like that.
Well, it's the guilt trip, okay? They start, geez, this last year I couldn't believe it. Before Halloween, there were some stores that actually had Christmas stuff up, and I'm like, you guys are just pushing too hard. You're making it so that we're weary of Christmas by the time it rolls around. We're tired of the Christmas carols thousands of times over and over, and they're just wrecking the holiday and the spirit of it. And also in the book, there's some also alternative ideas than rather than buying people stuff. How about making a coupon book, because, you know, everyone's got a printer and a computer. Make a little coupon book, and let's say your sister usually asks you to babysit the kids, you know, maybe two or three times during the year because she and her husband like to go out and do something. Okay, so make a little coupon book where, you know, you're going to offer them little, like, favors as gifts. And so, and that can be something that won't cost you anything. You know you're going to do it anyway. And then also the other person realizes, oh, wow, I guess I really ask them for these favors a lot because I'm only getting four coupons for this and I really wanted to do it every single month. And it's like, no, you get four a year. That's it, you know. So other things, sometimes people – I'll pick an example that something I don't do. I don't pickle my own pickles, okay? I'm just not a pickler person. So why not if you know, people rave about these things every time you make it. They say, oh, this is the best XYZ, whatever it is that you make in the world. Why not decide to make some of your gifts? And again, instead of waiting until the end of the year when you're going to be jammed up for time, make it and freeze it, and that way you have got maybe a third of your gifts already prepared and sitting in the freezer. I mean, how wonderful is that? I mean, let's say it's chili con carne or chili beans or, you know, I personally make cranberry sauce that people rave about for months. And they say, oh, we could use this on pancakes. We can use this on ham. We can use this, the cranberry sauce, you know, on turkey. So, during the year, I buy fresh cranberries, and it's not every month, but let's say maybe two or three times during the year, I'll make up a big old batch, let it cool, and then freeze it. And I'll put, I write on the top of it, because I use different things in it. So I use juice instead of water. So I'll, it's kind of like a mini recipe. I just, you know, write, I made this batch with orange juice, raisins, and walnuts, or cranberry juice, pecans, and, you know, raisins, or whatever. So that, and so they get a handmade gift they can't get anywhere else that I know that they enjoy and love. And it's already, you know, everything for me is done by the beginning of November, because that way I can enjoy just writing out some Christmas cards. Wrapping the gifts is fun because I put on a nice little Christmas album and I just happily wrap away. And I'm not having to run out to the stores when everybody else is doing it and get in a panic because I can't find anything for anyone, you know?
I do, and that makes so much sense. I mean, you just have to think smart and save and balance that family budget. But, you know, Diane, is there a certain point in the relationship, for instance, I know you're supposed to be honest with your mate and say, okay, I have this amount. But sometimes if you know how your mate is, you want to try to probably hide money. Is that advisable?
Well, you know, I really don't want to touch that one with a 10-foot pole, and I'll tell you why. Because if a person feels like they can't trust their mate, it's not up to me to say, no, you shouldn't do it, okay? But also, the reason I wouldn't advise it is because if you do it and they catch you, they'll do it. And then neither of you will know how much money you really have. You see, and how much and what you're actually spending it on. So I think that a good relationship in general, particularly a marriage, is based on honesty. And so I will stick by that as my general rule of thumb. When dealing with your mate, you should be honest with them, because if you lie to them, they can lie to you, and then who knows what they're actually hiding behind your back. You see,
exactly.
It does not go well once you start down that road. So,
I do understand that. Don't want to tick for a tack. But what we're going to end up doing, we're going to take a quick, short break, and we are going to be back with Diane. We're talking about budgeting, saving, making sure that you spend your money correctly. Because times are hard, and that's no point. But you're going to want to go on that vacation. But as I said, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back. So if you have any questions for Diane, go ahead and call in at 347-226-37.
Chris, you're not acting like a grown-up in our relationship.
M2.
There's your comic book collection, the race car bed.
I'm young at heart, but I put money into my 401k every paycheck. I'm taking control over my financial life, and that feels pretty grown up to me.
Put away a few bucks, feel like a million bucks. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's feedthepig.org. Are those footy pajamas?
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
All right. We're back with Diane, the author of Budgeting on a Dime. And she's trying to teach you on how to spend your money all the time when you think that you need something and it's not going to work that. So, Diane, what is some of the best advice that you probably can give some of our listeners when it's time to vacation?
Pardon me, I didn't hear the first part of your question because the music was still playing. I'm sorry.
What are some good suggestions for people who want to take a vacation? Because sometimes in that point, you feel that you got to buy everything in the book to get prepared. And there are some good, probably safe tips that will help you prepare better for your vacation where you don't have to spend an arm and leg.
Well, I think that one thing is to think of alternative travel. For example, trains are less expensive usually than planes, so you might want to reroute your thinking instead of going all the way across country to do something. Find something really fun and unique and neat, maybe either in the state you're in or, you know, maybe one state over, and take the train. For one thing, it's a lot less stressful, you know. you can enjoy the scenery going by. You'll find, you know, you're relaxing while you're on the train because you're not worrying about dropping out of the sky, And it can be part of the fun. Another thing is to look for things that maybe you can drive to. You know, there's a lot of people who live in really cool places with cool stuff to do, and this happens a lot when, relatives from out of town come, and they say, oh, we want to do this, that, and the other that's right there in your state, and you're like, yeah, we've never even been there. So how about looking closer to home, you know, just while you're trying to get your finances in order before you spend, you know, tons and tons of money. And also, if you book early and you know, figure out where you want to go at least 6 months before and book through one of the websites that do a comparative on the prices for hotels. That'll save you a lot because if you go, first of all, in an off season, so it means don't go in the summer and expect low rates. That's when everybody goes. So try and take a fall vacation or try and take a spring vacation or try and go, you know, when it's not the peak season for that place you're going to. And also with 6 to 8 months of being able to, plan for it and you can also spread out what you buy for it. Let's say you need new bathing suits for the kids because you're going to go swimming at a hotel or swimming at the beach or whatever. Instead of buying everything at the last minute when you know you're not going to get the best deal, again, give yourself enough time to have purchased things and see, oh, well, maybe we have some, we don't need new suitcases. We've got suitcases that will be all right. Or maybe you can just borrow some from, you know, family as far as things that you need. Rather than buying everything, see what you can borrow. And also, like, we took a vacation our very first time we ever went to Europe. Well, I basically, of course, I'm, you know, a freak at this stuff. So I basically had the whole thing paid for before we ever walked out the door.
I know that's right. That's the best way, Diane. That is really smart. Yes, I hope the listener will take a heed to that one. It don't take long to spin up. But in the current situation, should a person just get rid of all their credit cards?
No, absolutely not. And I'll tell you why, because emergencies happen. You know, people will say, you know, they're of that. It used to be called something like The Secret, and it was a book where it was all positive thinking. It's like, I've actually had callers call in and say, oh, you shouldn't have an emergency fund because then you'll have emergencies. I'm like, what universe are you living in? Are you kidding me? You know, your kid's playing sports at school, and they get injured. Guess what? Even if you have health insurance, there's what's called a deductible, meaning you're responsible for X amount of the first health expenses that are incurred. So it's like if you have that money in the bank and you have an emergency fund, it doesn't create emergencies. It helps if the emergency happens. Same thing with car insurance. Let's say some idiot runs into the back of you. Wasn't your fault. Do no fault of your own. But guess what? You still have to pay the deductible on the insurance that you have in order to get your car fixed. So your washing machine breaks. Okay, it's like, oh gosh, I've got, you know, 5 people in this house and it will be really expensive to take it to the laundromat. So rather than doing that, we need to buy, a new washing machine. Well, you didn't create the problem by having that money in the bank ready, right? I mean, that's insane thinking. I don't know what these people are thinking with their foot, not their brain. I don't know, because it's like, gee, emergencies just come up in real life, and it's through no fault of your own. You didn't plan for it, but if you plan to have money in the bank, and people go, well, I don't even have money now to spend. How can I get an emergency fund going? Well, it's called automatic transfer. You can set it up with your bank that every paycheck that goes into the bank, $20 goes into the bank, your savings account. It just automatically. So when you look at what do we have to spend, that money is already sitting in your savings account, and you don't have to worry about spending every last penny and not having enough for savings. That's where people make the mistake. They go, okay, well, after the month is over and all the money's gone, then I will put money into the savings account. And it's never going to happen. Never going to happen. So just automatically have it transferred right out of your checking account, you know, to your savings account, and that way you don't miss it, and it's starting to build up. It'll start to build up over a period of time. Oh, let's say you get a discount check from somewhere, or the kids get, you know, or you get, you know, money, you know, unexpected, a refund on something. Pop it into the savings account instead of the checking account, and you will find that when that emergency comes up and you need to pay the deductible on that car, you know, accident that was not your fault, or you need to pay a down payment on a washing machine because it broke because it was like, you know, 30 years old and, you know, things break, you will have the money for it.
Yes, that is so true. And you know, some people say that I have heard where you need to probably at least try to put $1,000 aside. I mean, that seems a little daunting to save up that much, but is it possible that you could actually do it?
You mean $1,000 a month?
Yes,
or just $1,000 in the bank?
Just $1,000 in the bank to just start off with saving, try to put that much to the side.
Well, the thing of it is if you don't have a time limit on when you're going to save that, let's say, you know, you want to save $1,000, and this is a really good, okay, there, this isn't even in the book, but this is a really good way to know that you're going to be getting some money that's unlooked for. When you go to apply for a job, they ask you how many with deductions are you going to claim, meaning if there's four people in your family, you put four, and then they deduct a certain amount of money every month from your check, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What you do is you put zero withholding. It's called withholdings. Zero withholding, and that way they take out the maximum that they can take, and then at the end of the year when you do your taxes, you have overpaid during the year, and you get a huge tax return back. Instead of owing on your taxes, the government sends you a check, and they can automatically deposit in your account within 6 days of your finishing your taxes online. So you go online, and, you know, you've got your W-2 from work. It says this is how much money you make, and then they deducted a whole mess because you said you had zero withholdings, okay? Now, a lot of people don't like this idea. That's fine. They don't have to use it. But I have gotten in the five-figure returns for the last 10 to 20 years. Five figures.
Oh, wow.
You see what I'm saying? They owe me money instead of me owing them money. Why? Because we put zero withholding. Now, some people think they're really smart, and they go, well, the government doesn't go to your house to check to see how many people are living there. So you can put eight, even if there's only two of you. You can put 10. You can put 15. Okay? But the thing of it is, you know, you don't get anything back then. You owe money then. So the best thing to do is put a big old zero in that place. You never feel it leaving your account. You don't feel the lack of that money. But at the end of the year when they say, okay, this is how much you made and this is how much you owed in taxes, oh, look, you overpaid your taxes. We have to send that back to you. Both the state and the federal have to send that money back to you. And guess what? You end up with a lot more money once a year than you could ever imagine.
Yes, you do. And most of the time, so on mine, I will take out an additional $20 out of my check. So that way I won't have to owe so much if it does come to that point. So that's another thing, too, because I remember I was working one job, and it looks like we were making so much money. So I said, I'm going to have them taking out an additional amount of money out of my check. So that's another thing people mostly can do.
Right. Right. There are ways that you can help yourself save by having, you know, automatic, you know, deductions, automatic withdrawals that go directly to your savings account and start building that thing up. But one thing you have to agree to, you and your mate that have access to this money, that neither of you are going to touch the savings account, that is an inviolable rule that neither of you can break. I don't care if you say, oh, well, but look at this dress, or oh, but look at this, you know, running machine, or whatever it is. That has got to be a hard and fast rule that you do not touch the savings account, because that is your emergency account. Because, believe me, when it happens and you need it and it's not there, it is a world of pain that you're going to be going through.
Oh, yes, but it seems like
isn't budgeting a big bore, though? Because it just seems so hard when you're talking about budgeting sometimes. You try and it just doesn't work, Diane.
Well, some people don't like to do things that I would call of the mind, and they do think that it's boring, but you can also take some free classes or low-cost classes at, say, a local university or a local school, and, you know, let them give you some tips, because, you know, sometimes people don't like self-help books because you have to work it all out yourself. Even if it's really well explained like mine is and take you step by step through it, they want somebody in person to show them on the blackboard, you know, well, this is how you do this and this is how you do this, and then you start clicking in, you start understanding it. Take a low-cost financial course, and even if it's just like a one-day seminar, it doesn't have to be, you know, like you're putting your life into this. You know, take a one-day seminar to help you understand, you know, where your money is going, how to keep track of it, how to set up a simple budget, and also how to reduce expenses, because all these things are critical to start getting in control of your money. And believe me, let's say you've been mishandling your money for, you know, 20 years. Well, you know, one day or 1 hour or one weekend on it is not going to do it. But if you start to teach yourself how to do it and give yourself the time to dig yourself out of the hole that you're in, let's say you're in a deep financial hole, you have to start digging your way out slowly but surely. Let's say it takes 3 years, okay? That's, I mean, a lot less than it takes to, say, get a diploma at a university. So it takes 3 years to dig yourself out, but then after that you start saving and you start building your equity and you start getting things under control and you start understanding how to work with your money so that you have enough and it's going to go far. That is what I'm saying, is look at it as a long-run project. It's like your kids. I mean, you don't expect them, when you're pregnant, you know, you don't expect them to grow up to be 18 and leave the house, or whenever they're going to leave the house, overnight. That's like a long-term project. Think of this as a long-term project that'll take you maybe 3 to 5 years, depending on how severely you're in debt, to get out of debt, and then after that you actually start building equity in your financial situation so that you have a savings account, so that you start building a retirement account for yourself, so that you start being able to pay off your credit cards at the end of each month. So, you know, and all this is doable. All this is doable as long as you give yourself the proper amount of time to do it. Don't expect it. You didn't get in debt, like, and get in the mess that you're in financially overnight. You're not going to get out of it overnight, but you'll still never get, you will not get out of it at all if you don't start working on it, right?
Exactly. And piggybacking off what you just said earlier, sometimes you have children and you don't know what other things might come up as far as health care or the disabilities that your child might go through. God forbid that does happen, right? But those are things that you have to keep in mind. Might need a transplant. You don't know that. So let's make sure when you get the insurance, too, as I was speaking to one of my other guests before this week, when we get this life insurance and all these other health insurances, let's make sure we're checking this to make sure that it covers certain things.
That's right.
Because if you need a heart transplant, your insurance don't cover it, then that's the issue. And myself, I need to check mine while I'm speaking on it. Because that's a hard feeling. You need that certain thing, and they tell you, oh, you can't get it because your insurance don't cover it. And now you need so many millions of dollars to get it done, and they don't want to do it because it's a part of their policy. So, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, and, you know, reviewing, you know, once you get your finances in order, start reviewing your insurance policies to see that they, you know, provide the coverage, because you're paying for this every month. You might as well know exactly what they will and will not provide for you, because you may be able to go out and shop for a better insurance, something that's going to cover what you need and not have these exclusions on you.
That's right. Well, Diane, do you have any other advice for the listeners out there on saving money, budgeting, that you probably didn't cover just now?
Well, I have one tip that I'll share with them, but I would like to mention that the book Budgeting on a Dime, 10 Steps to Financial Independence, is available on Barnes & Noble, so you can get it right online. Also, Amazon.com, so you can get it right online. You can also go to your local library. It is, you know, a fully copywritten and registered book, so you could go to your library and ask them to, you know, do they have it? They can get the book, and you can use it there at the library, but you can't copy the forms. This is not like the kind of book where, you know, you can just read it in the library, because you actually need to use the forms, and you need to fill it out. So I wanted to spell also my last name so that they would be able to know how to get it. So the first name is Diane, D-I-A-N-E. Last name, Teagarden, T-E-G-A-R-D-E-N. Or they can go to my website at www.firewalkerpublications.com. And all the information on all my books is there, reviews of the books, links to where they can buy it. You can also buy them in ebook format, which is a lot cheaper than the paperback. But again, you know, you're going to want, this is not the type of book where you can actually use unless you have the forms to start filling out, and the forms that are right there in the book for you to print out. And that way you can use them several times. Because if you write right in the book, then that's only good for one time you're doing your budgeting. And as your, you know, situation changes, let's say you get a raise. Okay, you need to adjust your budget to include the extra money, where you're going to put that, you know, as far as allotting it. So my tip that I would like to share with your listeners is, a lot of people don't like to use coupons. They say, oh, I don't have the time to use coupons. Well, I usually sit down, like, just for groceries. I'm just talking about groceries, okay, because you have to buy food, and you usually buy it every week, right, unless you're going to, you know, starve your kids and not feed them 1 week or whatever. But so every single week you put this money out, and people say, oh, I don't have time to do coupons. Well, it takes me about 25 minutes to put together my list and add in, you know, I tape the coupons right to the bottom of the list so they can't get lost, and they're with me when I go to the store. And I save approximately $25 per week, okay? So when they say they don't have the time, I ask them, what job do you do that pays you a dollar a minute? You don't have a job that pays you a dollar a minute. Nobody has a job that pays them a dollar per minute. And that is what it is worth it to you, to sit down and do those coupons and, you know, put them, you know, tape it onto the bottom of your list. And then the other hint is to go ahead and write on the list. And you should have a list, because if you just go without a list, you're going to buy a bunch of junk food that you don't even need or want or shouldn't get, and you're going to forget some items and have to run back to the store. Make a list. It's very easy. Just make a list of the things that you need. Everyone says, you say, hey, you know, there's a kitchen magnet. Everyone's got millions of kitchen magnets. Put it on the list. If it's not on the list, it's not coming home with mom, okay? So have them write in what they want on the list. And, you know, usually you can save up to $25 per week. So I save $100 a month on food by setting and doing my coupons. And like I say, it takes 20, maybe 25 minutes. It saves me $25, and that means I'm getting paid a dollar a minute. So yeah, there's no job that'll pay you that. So it is worth it as far as your time.
It is. Well, Diane, I do. I appreciate these tips, because these are things that we have to stay up on. It's just so much out here that we are misinformed about. But I do thank you for your time and effort to be on my show today.
Oh, you're welcome, Technisha. I'm glad that everything is working out for you, and I'm sure that, you know, you'll be able to, you know, take this information and help you and your husband organize, you know, your finances as well, because anyone can do this. This does not take a degree. You don't even have to be good at math. That's what calculators are for.
Absolutely. And also, people, you can catch Diane, too. She has her own radio talk show on Blog Talk Radio. So make sure you catch her as well.
Well, I no longer actually run that show. All the interviews are archived. It's a renewable energy show, and all of them are archived and still get listens, but it's not an active show. You can find them on Blog Talk Radio, under Diane Teagarden and Renewable Energy, but I'm no longer doing interviews because I did it for 3 years. I had a blast. I learned a lot, but, I've got, things that I have to do now that don't allow for the time. But thank you for replying to it. And again, if they go to firewalkerpublications.com, there's all the archive shows of all the interviews I've done, because I've written 4 books on 4 different subjects, and that way they can get any information that they need about it there.
Well, thank you again, Diane. You have a blessed one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Listeners, it has been a pleasure. I'm glad that you held on. And for the ones who didn't stay on long, I thank you for even tuning in. So please go to my Facebook fan page and make sure you like that, The Bright Side with Technisha. Coming up tomorrow is Carl Gruber. We'll be talking about health and everything. He's a marathon runner, so this should be interesting for all my healthy sports fans who love to stay fit, can't help it, just a junkie for it. So please stay tuned tomorrow at 12 o'clock. P.M. Eastern, and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to The Bright Side with Tanisha.
Come back daily from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern.
God bless.